I want my 5280 gig now!
From the Mobile 5280 Studios, Weekend Geek Update, Spotlight Edition. We just wrapped with the All Seas Fan Expo, and there were a couple of, I don't know, lounge lizards, layabouts, if you will.
Aye, there was someone creeping in the corner.
That, of course, ladies and gentlemen, is the infamous, notorious Rodney Ramos.
Aye, it is I have arrived for your podcast, sir. Down from the depths of the darkness that I draw in, I come upon thee into the light to speak with thee.
They don't like get you a stick or something to poke you with or food or anything down there?
Occasionally throw a bucket down with lotion. It's very suspicious.
Puts the lotion on its skin or gets the hose again.
No, puts the lotion on your hands and draw again, you bastard. Draw.
How demanding is your gig these days? You've been at this for a number of years.
I've been at this for 12 or 25 years.
And it hasn't aged you a day past 40.
Are you kidding? Who needs to go into the light? Your skin stays silky smooth when you don't see the sun at the time.
He's only 29.
I'm only 19 and a half and three quarters in 1 day and 4 hours and 39 seconds.
You'll be happy to drink legally one day?
Eventually. Alcohol is quite delicious.
So where are you currently at in projects? Because, I mean, you've been all over.
I jump all over the place. I just finished up with Lion Forge on helping out some issues of Astonisher. I'm waiting up on another project now. In the meantime, I do shows, commissions, travel around, talk to people, you know, whatever.
Whatever. What's the story with Transmetropolitan?
Transmet, you know, they're just reissuing all the Absolute. I mean, the last Absolute just came out, number 3, and they just started reissuing it again in trade paperback.
Which, I don't know
like
why.
The whole entire issue.
I mean, why they stopped. I don't know why that one runs out of print.
Well, because they originally, Warren Ellis originally, he only had 60 issues. It was a 5-year, and that was it.
Okay.
They didn't really think beyond it. He didn't really want to do anything more than that. And, you know, he was doing quite a few books toward the end there, so the schedule was getting kind of tight.
Okay.
It was like, you know, it was getting difficult for him to keep doing it. So, you know, there was a lot going on. So I think the 5 years was, he was like, all right, that's enough.
Wow.
But now, considering the political climate, that book, if they did it now, forget about it.
Yeah, right? That's why I was like, talk about a book that was before its time, because it didn't miss the mark, but it is so relevant today.
Right. So it's like if they said, we should do a series, a TV series, or do a movie on it, it's probably, this is the best time, because the political statement that series did, like talked about, the things that they did in there. Well, like currently, you're like, wow, that's so similar to what's going on now.
Well, I mean, you got shows like Lucifer.
Right.
And, you know, it looks like Neil Gaiman's now hitting his stride with, all of his stuff.
He's got his American Gods.
American Gods. You've got Good Omens. Preacher. Oh, my God. Have you watched the Preacher show?
Oh, yeah. It's fucking crazy. Can we curse on this podcast?
Of course we can.
Because we need to curse all the time for what we're talking about.
Yes, because I once got fined by the FCC for accidentally saying holy shit on the air.
Really?
Yeah.
That must have been a holy moment.
It was. The mayor of Georgetown was a Playboy model here in town.
Yeah.
And her pictures got posted, so we're sitting there, and I thought I was far enough off a mic that nobody would hear me. So the picture comes on, I'm like, holy shit! And they, sure enough.
They're like, boom. They're like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Hello? Yeah. Are you the man that said holy shit on a podcast? Uh-huh. Yes. We have some friends that are coming to visit you. They'll be dressed all in black with hats.
How'd you know?
And they'll be telling you things. Just don't argue with them.
How'd you know? Because that is, I mean, it was like Men in Black suddenly showed up and like,
ding dong.
We need to have, yeah, oh dude, it's totally Book of Mormon. Ding dong, FCC.
Well, they recently, you know, these days, anybody that says anything against the president, even online or even jokingly,
right?
Like, so apparently Trevor Van Eeden had a scenario like that. He just posted, you know, it's a disagreement.
I saw that.
Two guys showed up, two FBI guys showed up to his house, and they're like, who are you? Like, you don't know. Look, there's my poster right there. You can find out. You can find out everything about me online. Why do you need to come and visit me? Like, do I look threatening? I got to go to work.
Like, yeah, I got to go punch my 9 to 5, like, assholes.
He was smart. He's like, can he come in? They're like, no, get the fuck out of here. We don't want to fucking deal with you. If he can't handle criticism, he should be president. Like,
yeah,
that was his attitude. And, so, and he rightfully so, you know, because as Americans, we have that right to speak our minds.
We do. You know? Speaking of speaking your minds, and this is probably a delicate subject, but I'm going to touch it anyway. DC or Marvel?
The deep pondering. I'm going to go into my deep voice.
I want to say, yes, give me the...
A long, long time ago, the cold winter breathed upon me. And the only thing that came out and saved my soul was Marvel.
Wow, Marvel.
Well, I started at Marvel. I can't.
Can't turn your back on them?
Are you kidding?
What was your first Marvel book?
What was my first Marvel? My first, actually... I was a Romita Raider first. Are you familiar with Romita Raiders?
Yes.
John Romita back then was art director at Marvel, and he would have assistants, and it was an art assistant program, which you would try out for it, and if John liked you, and a slot opened, you would get in there, and you would work in the bullpen doing art corrections on anything that the editors came through. So the art editors would bring a correction to John. And they say to John, all right, we need this leg done or whatever. We need this. And then John would call us in, and he would say, all right, we need to redraw this. We need to finish inking this. And then he would hand it to us to finish the product. Then we hand it back to John or take it back to the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we were supposed to work on your samples, get to know the editors, learn the ins and outs of the business, and then land some work. And you could
your
stay,
typical intern
yeah,
gig.
Say, but you were getting paid. It wasn't. You were actually part of staff. You were part of the bullpen. It wasn't an internship because you were getting paid. And, you know, you learn the ins and outs, and then after a year, you're supposed to have gotten work, and then you leave, which everybody pretty much did except for a few people. But
right.
Some people didn't even, you know, like, I think, like, Kevin Maguire got work within, like, 2 months, and it was out of there, you know. Some people just got very, they were very talented people, and just, like, Kevin was really talented, and they were like, you need to be working, and they gave him a gig. And
you're like, no, come on.
Yeah.
That's nice. So you don't remember what your first book was?
It depends. I mean, if you're talking about bits and pieces, then it was in the Marvel Universe handbooks. Because
which is gold.
There were a lot of panels that had to be redrawn. So they would give them to us, we redraw them, and then Joe Rubenstein inked everything that had to do with the Marvel Universe handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of pieces that I actually drew a couple of the Marvel Universe characters for the pages.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the ones I did, but one was a bunch of monsters and something was something else. And I think that was those were the first few drawn stuff that I did. And then it went on, I think, I can't remember whether it was first doing Marvel Comics Presents, the 8-pagers.
Right.
Or if it was Thundercats 24 was my first issue.
Okay.
Full issue.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Fond memories. Do you miss Marvel?
Yeah. Marvel back in the day was so much fun. You don't even know how much fun it was. It was crazy. Jim Novak used to be the in charge of production, so he would have a loudspeaker.
Right.
And he goes, all right, who wants to work tonight? I've got some pasting. Back then, you had to paste the lettering on the original artwork because sometimes the artwork needed to be inked, so they would letter the page on vellum. And had to be cut out and pasted down, and they paid you a couple of bucks for it.
That's
and they
awesome.
Go, all right, who wants to work tonight? You get on a lot. Who wants to work tonight? And then we all race up because, you know, it was extra cash, and you're like, you run over. I'll take 5 pages, but I'll take 3. And the work would disappear. And he did that one time. I think one of the issues of Amazing Spider-Man over McFarlane was running really late. And at the time, it was Jim Salah, and Jim was like, all right, who wants to ink Todd McFarlane tonight? Like, we ran over. I got like 3 pages. And that issue is number 305. It's the inker where the credit is, it's the Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
And in the back, in the bullpen page, they actually list the seven people who helped out finish inking that book.
So you're part of the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, part of it. You know, it's kind of like being part of, like, you know, like Neil Adams' Krusty Bunkers was all those guys that were working in a studio in Continuity Studios that would help pitch in inking an issue of Conan or something. Like, Neil would do the hedge or the figures, and so somebody would do the backgrounds, or somebody would finish off certain things. Yeah, it was great. It's fun doing work that way as a group, you know, because, hey, what do you hear? Take that background, and all right, you do those background figures.
Seems extremely positive, very character building and skill set.
It's a deadline thing, so you're learning and you're getting paid for it.
Right.
And you know, it's all camaraderie and getting the book done and getting it in on time. You know, helping out. It's a lot of crazy stuff will go on back at Marvel. They used to have a wrestling belt. One of the others used to have a wrestling belt, and so they would do fake wrestling in the back by the elevator. So it used to be these freight elevators, and they would have, like, all right, they run the belt. The guy would run the belt, like, all right, the fight's going on. They would taunt each other, and then they would go in the back, and they would fake wrestle, you know, like they do their whole bit, and everybody, like, yeah. And one time, one of the maintenance guys came out and said, "What the hell are you doing?" Like, they're like, "What? We're like, you can't do that. We're not insured for that. Get the hell back in the fucking office.
You're going to break your fool neck, kid."
Yeah, I mean, they had so much fun back then. They used to have, like rubber gum pellet fights every now and then.
Dangerous.
Not the little
BB ones?
Not the BB ones. Oh, okay. Like, you know, they're harmless. Like, you get hit.
Oh, the Nerf
like,
guns.
Yeah. So they would run around kind of shooting each other or whatever at night. They would have teams, you know, but this is on top of, like, the Marvel baseball team versus DC baseball teams. There was a lot of fun stuff going on. I mean, I'm sure the baseball games still go on to this day, though.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
In some capacity. I don't know if it's DC versus Marvel, because Marvel's not out. But when Marvel and DC were in this end, they used to have a lot of baseball games against each other all the time.
Yeah, before they had to move Marvel to, because Quesada's hard-on is to get them out of New York and
That's still Disney. The thing is, Disney wants to consolidate the offices, you know, because what's the point of having the publishing over here? So they slowly moved the offices to, like, 50th Street. I don't know how long they're going to stay there, but there's always talk of them moving down to, like, Florida or going over to LA.
Right.
You know, it's to consolidate, to have everything in one air, in one place, so they can.
So you're saying Disney's going to just have to buy all of California soon?
Well, I mean, look, they own everything now. They got Fox. I mean, look, quietly they bought Marvel. Well, they didn't quite.
There was no quiet about that.
They bought Marvel. But the other thing at the time, they had bought Indiana Jones. They bought the rights to Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got Star Wars.
That was the sneaky right there, because that was
Star Wars
backroom dealing.
There were a couple other properties they got, but then the final piece that they were missing that wasn't part of that Marvel package was the Fox universe that had X-Men and, like, Deadpool and a few other things. So they finally completed that. So now they are the masters of the licensing.
Oh, they got
universe.
Jim. They got Jim Henson. They got Peanuts.
They got everything. They got everything. They can produce. Like, I always tell people all the time. You always hear like a big director like James Cameron go, "I'm tired of these I'm waiting for superhero fatigue." And I go, "Well, you do realize that Marvel Comics and DC Comics combined have somewhere like maybe the 200 to 500 characters that don't have superpowers, that are just regular characters."
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could. You would never know that those were Marvel DC characters unless the logo flashed in front of you.
Absolutely. You know? A lot of the Vertigo movies that DC has produced, you have no idea.
The amount of properties that they produced over 50 years, you know? it's crazy because a lot of it's just the tip of the iceberg of the amount of movies that come out. The only reason why is with CGI and all this, and now they're capable of doing all the special effects that they need to make these movies. So this is just the beginning. It's like the first wave. You know, Marvel lining up the movies, and Disney lining up, hey, these are the properties. They're actually doing it the way you would do it in comics. You would have a series like Avengers, and then you would introduce another series, another bunch of characters inside the Avengers, spin those characters off, right? You would build the universe out, and then you do the tie-in movies, like Avengers Endgame and stuff like that. You know, so fatigue, you know, no one's going to get tired because people are just beginning to see these characters.
Well, a lot of people are. I mean, it's not like Star Wars where they're beating it into the ground. They're not they're not thinking about how to execute Star Wars.
Well, see, that's the thing. They're beginning to understand that. Think about it. For the last 30 or more years, how many books of the extended Star Wars universe are there that they're finally going to get a chance to go, hey, let's go beyond the main characters. Let's do all these other characters. And they're starting to do the same thing in the Marvel movies, introducing those characters for 30 years of the novels into the Star Wars universe.
But Cloak and Dagger, really?
Well, you know, you gotta try everything and see what sticks. I mean, you know, if it doesn't work, you know, well, there's a whole wealth of other characters to go to.
Very true.
You know.
But I feel bad with the, for example, the Star Wars universe that they'll never, I don't guess, I can't say never, but the Dark Horse stuff. I mean, there's some gold in there with all of what they did for Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, I think with the licensed property, that all goes wherever the license goes.
I don't know, but I was under the impression they told them to destroy it.
Oh, really?
I think.
But how is it possible? Okay, I'll give you an example because Conan.
Right.
Dark Horse has Conan. Well, they've been reprinting all the Marvel stuff in trades.
That is
true.
And
because I had a couple of issues that I had worked on Conan that came out in books through Dark Horse and trade books or hardbacks.
In hardbacks. And the collected editions.
I think it's once you have the license, that material's included.
Okay.
That's why you don't see Marvel. You know, like if Marvel goes, now that Marvel has Star Wars back again, they'll probably go back and reprint all that material again too.
Hope so, because there's some good
of course,
stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
in there.
Look, it's you know, it's back catalog. To them, it's just a matter of repackaging it and putting it out again.
Putting the mouse packaging on it.
Well, with the Vader helmet. On
oh my God! Yes.
No, you know, it's Vader's helmet with the. You could see the mouse inside. He's like, he's breathing in. Yeah. I have used the Force, and I've captured the whole universe. Marvel is part of us now.
Hi.
Hi, pal. I've captured the universe. I've got Marvel now.
Kiss my ass.
Right.
Come here, Minnie. I want you to control these guys. I will. I'll quit it.
Take it.
So what's your thoughts then on DC? I mean, are they going to finally get it right? I mean,
well, eventually, but the thing is, I wonder what goes on. The thing is, Marvel has a very cohesive universe because I think it's Avi Rod. That's basically, he understands his character and a host of other people from Marvel that understands that we're going to build this universe out properly. And they really plotted it out. And the thing is, I think a lot of the DC characters are kind of not in one place.
No, that's true.
It's not under one roof where somebody does say, all right, we've got this master plan to release these, introduce these characters in these movies, build it out the way Marvel. I mean, all they have to do is follow the Marvel example.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could be, who's going to say anything? Marvel and DC copied each other's characters for a long time. If DC created character, Marvel creates a character. DC creates a character, they copied it, Marvel copied it. So it doesn't matter if they kind of copy the same plan. You know, it could help them, but there's a lot of, like, they're finally getting their act together. Slowly you're picking the right character. They're moving past Batman and Superman. They were really stuck on that for a long time.
Well, it was the only thing making them money.
Well, I mean, Marvel's proven that you could take characters that are not familiar, that are not, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, and make it. If you write it well enough and you make it interesting enough, people will come and see it.
I'm waiting to actually walk out of a theater with the same feel that I had after watching Guardians. Because, I mean, I was preaching that.
You didn't like Ant-Man? I loved Ant-Man.
Ant-Man is great. Ant-Man and Wasp is even better.
Yeah.
I mean.
And it built. That's what I love. It builds on top of it.
It stacks so well.
And here's the irony is that Deadpool... That's the one that's gotten really right. Deadpool and Deadpool 1 and 2, I love both of them. They're fantastic.
Well, I mean, and I think a lot of that, not to credit, we can't blow Ryan Reynolds' horn enough on because, I mean, he was the marketing machine. He was all that. Brian Hussein, I mean, it's his,
you know,
it's his writing on that.
He was born for that.
Well, he was.
If you watch other movies of his, there's one that I love. It's a Christmas movie he did. Oh, man, I'm blanking out on the name. Do you remember the name, Gerald? Like, it's... it's one of the funniest things you'll ever see. And if you see him in that movie, if you put him in a Deadpool costume, that's exactly him.
Is that the one where he's the rich guy and he goes and buys the house and he's with James Gandolfini?
No, he's the, he play in the beginning of the movie, it takes place in high school and he's very fat. And everybody makes fun of him.
Oh, that's...
And then he...
Friends with benefits or something or, like
yeah,
that.
Just friends. And he and an event in that part of the movie, he comes out and he says, "I'm going to leave you all behind." And it flashes back to the future where he's in shape and he's good looking and he's giving
dating advice. Yeah, after the hockey game.
And he's Anna Faris plays the crazy rocker girlfriend or ex rocker girlfriend. That movie, he is like, if you watch him, put him in a Deadpool costume, that's him.
Well, and
like,
even when I was watching the Hitman's Bodyguard, my God, that's all I saw was like Nick Fury and Deadpool hanging out.
He was born to play that. When they picked him, I said, oh my God, they couldn't have picked a better person for that.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's perfect for Hugh Jackman, Wolverine, who knew? Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool.
I mean, it surprised him because, you know, I guess when they were casting, everybody figured, well, Wolverine's got to be a 5-foot-something character. He's got to be short, stubby, with a lot of hair.
Right.
You know, you get disappointed, but, you know, sometimes casting has to do with, you know, there's got to be personality. There's got to be this. There's so many factors involved. And you get lucky with an actor like Hugh Jackman who just kills it.
Yeah. Everything, yeah. There is nothing that he hasn't really accomplished.
He's a dancer, he's a singer, he's everything. He's the Jackman. He jacks you up in everything he does.
As long as he's not jacking me off, I don't care.
Hello.
But, I mean, Marvel has done so well with the casting. Because, I mean, it's like the early seasons of Walking Dead. The casting that they did was so spot on and just A-list. Yeah. They've done it so well with Marvel. I don't know about Captain Marvel because I'm still pissed off about Annette Bening's character because that just, my God, that was nails on a chalkboard for me.
The thing is that you know that they're trying to get some other people that might not be interested in comic book movies or superhero movies to come into the... So if you put in Annette Bening, if you put a Michael Douglas in the film, people, Michael Douglas is in that? Wow, I got to see what the hell is he doing in that film.
But Michael Douglas is Hank Pym is gold.
He's perfect. And that's the great... Yeah. That's really good casting. And they're just...
Michelle Pfeiffer, brilliant. Brilliant.
And you know, as these movies go on, Marvel's universe is even going to get more deep into... So I tell people all the time, like, a lot of the storylines you're seeing now, they're 30 years old.
Yeah, a lot of them.
They just updated these stories, and that's how well they've held up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that all you have to do is tweak it and, you know, make it modern so that people can relate to it now, and it's golden.
So you know? with Shazam coming out, what are your initial thoughts are? Yay.
I mean, it looks fun, yeah. I mean, you know, I'll go see it, you know. Absolutely. I mean, it looks like a lot of fun. I would definitely go see it. Why not?
Okay.
You know, some movies I can't get to the theater quick. Sometimes I just can't deal with people these days where you spend $16 to go to a movie, and then you sit there texting on your phone with your light on, and you're not even paying attention to the movie. You're like, come on, I don't want to look at you texting.
You just spent almost $40 to see this film when you get done with booze, food,
my God,
and
it's crazy.
Ticket prices.
You're wondering, and then people let their phones ring. You're like, dude, you're not at home. Like, what the hell are you doing? You know, they're talking over the movie. Excuse me? I did pay a lot of money to see this film. Can you be quiet, please?
Just shut it up.
Yeah. Of course they'll do anything.
Oh, they'll do anything.
They'll do anything. Yeah, and you're like, you know, there are times I literally have waited for it to come out on Blu-ray. I got a big flash screen TV.
Yep.
I said, I can sit at home in peace, and if I really like it, I can watch it over and over again and enjoy work to it, everything.
Yeah, my sound system's better than some theaters.
Yeah, so sometimes it's not even worth going. I mean, unless it's something that has like some special... Like, you know how they have those 4D movies now with the moving chairs and everything?
Yeah.
I'm waiting until somebody has a heart attack and dies one of those things. Like, they start poking. I'm like, hey, the movie's done already. Get out. Oh, my God, it's a zombie. Run.
Is there a genre you haven't worked on that you would like to?
I don't know. I mean, I think I've worked on quite a few things. I think I covered a lot of it. I mean, there was a recent series for Titan Comics I did with Steve Scott. It's called Normandy Gold, and it's set in the 70s. And it's a 70s detective. It was really cool. She investigates all these crimes or whatever. And that, you know, that was pretty amazing. So that was a period piece.
Okay.
You know, and then it's Transmet futuristic, and then I've done quite a few superhero stories. And then other quirky things, some stuff I can't remember.
I mean, I know you've been your tour through Valiant.
Right. There's a lot of Hellblazer, a few other things. Some things Swamp Thing, some things I don't remember. I mean, it might be some of the projects are just helping out on, you know?
Right. Well, you've contributed so much over the years. I mean,
well, there's a bunch of guys, like Scott Hanna now, he's the king of it. He actually beat out, I think he's got Vinnie Coletta's record for the most amount of pages inked right now.
Holy crap.
Oh, yeah. There's a listing. We found this website now that has a listing of how many pages you've worked on. You're like,
oh, my God. What has that guy got for a life that he has time to do
Scott
that
Scott is
amazing.
Shit. He's a machine. He's a Terminator. An Inkinator, I call
The Inkinator.
Him. Inkinator. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's so at some point when you've worked on so many books and you're helping out on so many books, you've done everything at some point, particular point. So,
is there a character that you would love to get your hands on, like someone that
Doctor
you know?
Strange. I always loved Doctor Strange.
Agreed.
Never got a chance to work on.
Never.
Strange, no.
That seems like just like right in your
oh,
wheelhouse.
Oh yeah, but you know, it's. I was at Marvel for a while, and then I went over to DC. And I was at DC for a very long time, and I did bits and pieces at Marvel every now and then.
But right.
Generally, most of the work was done for the DC in the last 15 years or so. You know that I was working. You know, and then I jumped around. There's smaller companies. I worked at Legendary Pictures Comics.
Right.
It was a Geist Talk or Phantom Hawk, the Tower Chronicles with mm-hmm. Matt Wagner and Simon Bisley.
Right.
You know, you know, I've jumped around all over the place.
When you were growing up, did you have any idea this is where your life was going to be? I mean, what was the B plan?
I actually did know that's what I wanted to do. I've been drawing comics since I was like, I don't know, so from what my friends tell me, 6 or 7.
Wow.
Like I was drawing some version of, because comics was my escape. I was a big geeky kid back then. I just, that universe to me was everything. Stan Lee was a god, always be a god.
Always like, be a god.
Kirby, I sit there and that world was amazing to me. You know, every bit of it, that you pick up a comic and it was magic. You know, whoever it was working on it, I picked up everything. Just sit there and I just start drawing stuff and
right.
I was drawing my own. I remember there used to be a local comic shop in Queens that I used to go to that the owner was so cool and he would let us hang out in there. We were his gang.
He
adopted us and would take us to baseball games. We would have baseball games, you know. And him and his kids and everything would all have and he let me and another friend of mine, we wrote our own comic and drew it, and he let us sell it in the store. We would staple it together and sell it for like a quarter or something.
Wow.
You know. And I said, one day I'm going to be a comic artist. He says, yeah, yeah, sure, I've heard that all before.
You and all the rest of these kids.
And then I did get in, and I got my first book, and he was like, wow, you are the first person ever said he's going to make it in there, and did.
Wow. So is he proud to see you? Did you go back to the store and sign with him, of course?
Yeah, we always go back every now and then. You know, he didn't have the store. After a while, he didn't have the store for, because it wasn't that many years in, and then he stopped with the store, and that was it. There were another comic shop there that George Perez used to go called Mike's Comic Hut.
And, I'm familiar with Mike's.
That was the first time I met George Perez. It was awesome. I mean, I was a kid, and he was a little bit older. Like I think he's like 10, 12 years older. And, you know, he gave me my first advice. Hey, kid, use a ruler. What's that?
A ruler?
A ruler.
What is this weapon someone, you speak of?
I should find someone ruling a country and grab them. Come here, ruler. Help me out.
What are you doing? I'm questing for
hey,
a ruler.
Hey, get on my back. I rule a country, you bastard. Who is this crazy kid that needs a ruler?
And Perez is retiring.
Yeah, Perez, man. He's a, you know, he's just
he's
amazing.
So nice, though. I mean, I've met him multiple times.
Yeah, yeah. He is. There are no words. He is.
There are no words.
He's like the Mother Teresa of comics.
Well, it's even like when I've seen him.
He's just endlessly draws, endlessly happy, endlessly grateful. He's just unbelievable. He's an incredible role model.
Mm-hmm. Because every time I see him, and it's always at different cons. It's like he recognizes me, and he remembers me. He's just totally genuine.
He has an unbelievable memory. I mean, he's incredible. Always warm, always welcoming.
Yes.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen him in a bad mood.
I don't think so.
And if he is, I'm sure he just hides it. He says, yeah, I'll wait until I'm happy.
You know, somebody get me a soda. Cheer me up.
He goes through a lot, too. I mean, you know, all the years with his health problems with his eyes and stuff like that, you know, and and he just powers through it, you know.
He's created so much. Nobody really realizes his influence over the DC universe.
I mean, for such a long time. I mean, he wrote, drew Wonder Woman for such a long time. He's done so many, you know, first he was starting, you know, drawing, and then penciling and inking himself, and then he got right into the writing and just rolled right into it. He was just unafraid, took that challenge on and just did it.
Oh, he didn't care. He was just like, okay.
Yeah, but it just poured, everything just poured out of him. He could do, I think at his height, he was doing like penciling 3 books a month.
Wow.
3 books or more a month.
I mean, him and Byrne, their runs on Wonder Woman are probably to date one of my most favorite coveted parts of that story.
They're both like, they're just some people that just show up and their cup runneth over. You know what I mean? They're able to produce. I always wonder, did you ever have a bad day? Like, you know, you have a hard day where you can't create? Like, no, they don't. They somehow, they're so good that even, I think it's just a worth ethic too. They really understood, you know, you sit down and you work. It's something that, John Buscema was known for. He made comics his job, but it was like a job. So he would start at, let's say, 9 in the morning. You know, he would work on whatever. He would be doing layouts or type pencils. And wherever he was at the end of the day, at 5 o'clock or whatever, that was
it. Quits.
All right, work's over. Time to go eat and talk to the kids and hang out with the family and go do things. He lived a life.
He was structured.
He had balance, you know.
What's that like?
What's that like? Yeah, because back then you could kind of do that. But, you know, with Perez and those guys, I think, you know, they worked. They worked all the way through. I mean, it's just the love of it. The love carries you through.
Right.
You know?
So have you ever been starstruck in the circles? I mean, you navigate in there.
Of course. I got starstruck when I first met John Buscema. And I was standing there, and I knew that Buscema loved painting. And I had went to art and design, and I had these amazing painting teachers like Max Ginsburg and Erwin Greenberg, and they helped us. So he had a morning painting class. You go if you went in early, he'd give you 100% because he knew you would be dedicated. So we'd go in early, paint an hour and a half, and then during the day there was another 3 hours of illustration class. But he helped me get into the painting classes. So I painted another 3 hours. And then he had an afternoon painting class, and then we paid another hour and a half after that. And then I would, of course, be doing some comics in the middle of all that. And when I was at Marvel as one of the Raiders, John had come in, and we were standing there. And two of my friends, I think it was Chris Ivey and another guy, and they were sitting there working on corrections. And I had been standing, I'm tongue-tied. And I said, hey, I got to have a conversation with him. What should I talk about? And I'm thinking, I know he likes painters. And there's a French painter, Bougereau. I always pronounce his name wrong. And I said, you like, there's these painters. I just went to the museum and I saw Bougereau. And then he corrected, Bougereau. I think I was saying Bougereau, and he said, no, you mean Bougereau. And he corrected me. And I was like, And my friends, Chris and I, they just started laughing their asses off. And I turned, you try to talk to John Buscema when you're starstruck. You know?
Because you're very loquacious. I can't see you getting tongue-tied.
I totally was like, one time Stan Lee came in, and this is a funny story. It's told to other people, have other point of views, but I remember it. Stan wanted the artist to learn how to draw faster, so he invited John Buscema up to teach them how to do his quick layouts. Because, you know, John Buscema used to do these quick breakdown layouts, I mean, full of all the information. Like, he drew so well that, you know, he could do a figure. He could look at a panel and go, all right, you know, Conan's doing this, blah, 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 and just draw it out. You know, there was no like second guessing, or he just was very confident in his drawing. So when he came in with a giant pad, and we all filled the room up, and we're sitting here watching, and John starts to talk. All right, give me an idea, and they're like, "What? Conan and a horse." So John just starts drawing this Conan and the horse, and it's just coming so naturally to him. It's amazing. We're like, oh my God, he's just knocking it out. And he goes, so you want to do this? You want to draw Conan and the horse? You draw the blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, is there any question? All the hands went up in the room. Like, but how did you decide on that pose? What made you think of that? And he's like, what? You just draw it. You just do it. You don't do it. What are you worried about? Because he couldn't figure out why they couldn't, like, we couldn't draw like him, like, or understand. What do you mean? You just draw him in a horse.
Pay attention, son.
And we were like, everybody was just so confused because he had such a natural talent. And it was hilarious. And then Stan came in another time to, you know, he'd do these pep talks. And again, we were saying, anybody want to hang out with Stan? He's going to give a speech.
All right.
So we all would be in this conference room, and the place was packed. And Stan would be talking about, and Mighty Marvel, and then the DC. He talked about how, like, DC, how they came up with their name. And it's like, yeah, they came up with DC. Like, you know, he was teasing, but he was having fun, you know, just talking to everybody and getting them all psyched.
So unoriginal.
Yeah, it's just.
What was a Stan Lee pep talk like?
God, it was great because he goes, okay, kids, you know what? I want you to, like, this is what we're doing now. You know, it was always like a pitch. You know, he's, you know, you hear it. He would be like a general giving the troops the talk, but he, with that zing, that happiness, that joy.
Because growing up, I mean, Spider-Man and his amazing friends, any of the Marvel cartoons always had his voiceover going into it, so.
Oh, you Mighty Marvel kids,
exactly.
I thought
that's how
you.
We talked.
I've got a story about our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and it's one that's going to bring a tear to your eye, kids. Stay tuned, because this one will have you wringing a towel with your tears in it. You're like, what? I've got to read that book.
Because it did seem like that's how Stan Lee would speak. Like,
yeah.
It's constant.
And the mighty John Buscema's going to be drawing it. John Buscema's going to be drawing it. Oh, head explosion. Quick, pick up my brains because I got to be able to read this book.
Because
then you'll be going home. People on the subway going, why is this guy? You're sitting in a bathroom toilet. I can't wait for the book. Then you get the issue and your head explode again.
Jesus Christ,
mother of God, this kid's a head exploded like 5 times already. I don't have enough glue for it. Yes, they would lose their minds, these kids, particularly when they made a big announcement. The new Teen Titans by George Perez. Oh, no, Teen Titans by George Perez. I got to get that book right now. Got to get 10 copies. Just give me 10 copies. Just put them. Just throw them at me. Throw them at me.
Like flapjacks. Too early for flapjacks?
No. And they, you get one to wear out, and the other one you preserve like gold. Let me put that away. Yes. Case that. Don't touch it. Don't get your fingers on it. Oh, yeah. Slide that into the plastic. Oh, yeah. Take that thing down and put it in the darkest place possible. Let it not see light. I don't want it to fade.
Do you have a collection? Do you collect?
Sure. I still have the original boxes from my original collection. Over the years, I've given away a ton of stuff that I had. Like, there were a lot of Marvel comics.
Right.
But I still have quite a few comics from my own collection. I go through every now and then. I find my Master Kung Fu, and I go, man. Oh, I got to look through this again, you know?
Especially when they announced they're doing a movie, and I was
there's
okay.
This, you know, you go through, I find my... Because some of the boxes started to bend a little on them, so I had to go start getting bags and boards, and you start going through the books again and start having flashbacks like a war veteran. Like, oh, I remember this. Oh, my God.
Slight DTs.
You're like, this was fucking a great run of George Perez on Teen Titans. It was so good.
That is awesome. Because I always wonder, because, you know, some artists don't collect. They just like to draw, and that's, you know,
no,
leave it on the shelf.
But it's true. There are people that don't bother looking. But everybody's inspired. They have to be inspired by somebody. So
right.
You know that they were collecting. It's not true. They got their collections buried there somewhere that they go through. And, you know, every other artist, like, if they say they're not looking at some, of course they're looking at it. You want to see who's... Even now, you want to see who's working, who's doing what, what's really...
The newest trends, all that stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, newest styles coming out, who's doing this, who's doing what. You want to know what's going on. So, of course, they're looking. If they say they're not looking, they're lying to you. They're all lying. Everybody looks, you know, because you got to keep track of, like, if somebody does a good... Like, take, for instance, the Detective 880 by the Batman jock cover of Joker.
Mm-hmm.
That thing's amazing. Everybody goes on about that.
Yeah.
He killed it. It's like, that's amazing. Like, that cover's like... And now, you know, this is why you have all the variant covers now, because people are obsessed with, like... Oh,
the
what's
visuals.
What's he going to do?
Absolutely.
You know, what's Beyonce going to do for that cover? And, You know,
well, I mean,
what Adam Hughes is, it's, you know, people just get the books just for his cover because the art is so amazing.
Yeah, Hughes. I mean, even Terry Dodson. I mean, all his stuff is spot on.
So all the time, that's why I don't believe when anybody says, I'm not looking at the, of course you are. We're all looking. If Adam Hughes comes out with something, we're looking.
We're looking. just alone to see.
Yeah, we're okay. Just sitting there, we're going, damn, he's so good. He's so good. Why is he so good?
Your favorite artist?
Oh, well, I mean, if we... Look, my favorite has always been Perez because Perez lived in my neighborhood.
Perez is the man. He's hard to beat.
Perez is the man. John Buscema back in the day. I mean, Gene Colan. You could. They were even when McFarlane was doing stuff over to Spider-Man in the beginning. It was just new. It's so full of new energy.
Yes.
Simonson's run on Thor back then too was.
That is gold. I mean, I've got like triples of every issue. Yeah, for the Walt Simonson stuff.
That whole thing. At the beginning, Marvel wasn't crazy about the whole. Remember the Thor issue that was all splash pages by Simonson?
Yes.
I remember like, dude, that's not going to... I said, we looked at him, are you crazy? This is going to be amazing. Because like it's a whole issue of Simonson just having fun with big shots.
I still love his visual of Thor in the chariot with his goats.
Yeah.
And that thing is just beautiful. The flare and the, you know.
I mean, and then it's, you know, this iconic covers like the Beta Ray Bill, the first Beta Ray Bill, smashing the logo. You remember the Thor Frog. Cover that was great. You know, there's so much that Simonson's done that just like you just sit and you drool all day long. You're like, oh my god, it's so good.
I'm actually waiting for Frog Thor Frog, or however they want to call it. I'm waiting for that to show up in like Spider Ham or something like that.
Spider Ham's become like a big thing now too.
I never even thought about that.
Like Spider Ham, really?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I loved that. But it goes I read to the show shit that. Out of that comic.
Every time anybody says, "Oh, I'm waiting for Fatigue," well, it hasn't been showing up yet.
There's so much left to untap.
If Spider-Ham can make it, you know that there's like, they haven't even come near like the top part of those characters. I always tell people, there's Jack of Hearts, you know what? I love Jack of Hearts. And then there's Paladin. Marvel has this character called Paladin. And even if you went,
Paladin? The Black Knight Paladin or Paladin out of Spider-Man?
No, Paladin. Paladin was the Hitman. Paladin. That Paladin.
Yes.
That kind of character. People don't remember. There's one shot. Even Marvel has
There's a great cover with Western, Paladin.
Like Caleb Hammer.
Yes.
Caleb Hammer. Think of all the characters that are not superheroes that they have put out. So many titles that they put. No one remembers because they still create these characters and he did
they
a
just
short
get buried.
Run on them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even Jack of Hearts is an excellent example. I loved the limited series, especially when he showed up in Iron Man. Right. I was just like, oh, I even have the Bowen bust of Jack of Hearts.
Yeah,
I looked at that like,
I seriously
who the hell
think
is that?
Perez was challenging people, other artists, when he designed that costume, though. He's like, let me make it really difficult for somebody else not to be able to draw this guy. So only I could.
With the flared shoulder pads.
You know how intricate that design is?
Yes.
He built the actual Jack of Hearts character design into the suit, and you're like, damn it, I can't be drawing that all time. Like, I wish there was a pattern you could just throw
just
in
put
and
it on
click, click.
I like Ron Lim tried to like cheat corners when he brought
right. Well, he was good at that.
he was.
Ron's like another machine. He could churn out pages. He was like, my god, he was chock full of energy. He could sit down and do pages endlessly.
I feel bad Marvel just burned him out. I mean, he
was doing so much. I think he was still doing a lot of licensing stuff.
Was he?
That.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if he really got burnt out. I mean, I think he was doing I think he was doing a lot of licensing stuff. Like Jose Luis Garcia Lopez is another one who I worship on Grecian Line. When I got to know later, I was like another person I'd be like starstruck with, but now I know him. I'm more relaxed around him, so I can have a conversation. But he for a long time he does a lot of the DC licensing art.
Okay.
So you'll see
a lot
of his
paycheck.
Art. Oh, no, he's great.
Yeah.
Kidding? The stuff that you look at, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So they switch him on. And every now and then when he feels like he'll do an issue or something.
Okay.
You know? But he's quite happy doing the licensing stuff.
Hey.
So.
Fulfillment. That's all that matters.
Yeah. I mean, well, Jose Luis was another one that was like, oh my God, any issue he did. I remember a Superman issue, DC Comics Superman issue he did. I think it was... where he meets this alien, and turns out the alien you know, is trying to steal, you know, nuclear rods to help fuel his ship to get mm-hmm. back home. And then Superman shows him that his, you know, it's been so long that he was in hibernation that his planet already had died.
Gone.
Yeah. And that's the guy's, like, the alien's, like, in tears. There's not much Superman could do to help him, you know.
But he tried.
Yeah, of course. Of course, it's Superman. You have to let him know, like, you can't be pulling rods out of nuclear reactors. You're going to blow things up. I know that seems alien to you.
I know. Dun, dun, dun.
Excuse me, sir. Could you stop pulling out those fuel rods? What?
So, Rodney, what do you got coming up? What do people need to look forward to on the shelves from you?
Well, I recently helped out on some at Lion Forge on some Astonisher stuff. There's another project in the works. I can't talk about it because I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, in the meantime, I'm doing conventions and traveling around and doing convention, you know, like commissions and stuff like that. And,
If someone wants to follow you, what the tweets,
the
Facebook.
Facebook under my name. And Instagram, everybody's on Instagram. Instagram's a lot easier. It's under Rodney Ramos Comic Book Artist.
Okay.
I know it's kind of long. Everybody complains, oh, it's so long. But if you type my name up,
I would
comes
think
up,
would pull you up
Rodney
pretty quick.
Rodney Ramos, and it's the only, you know.
Well, let's put this
put
to the
to
test.
You
Red's,
put my name in.
Red's going to test it right
ding,
now.
Ding, 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 ding,
you have
ding,
no
ding, 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 ding. She only understands that joke. She's been traumatized by this, but don't mind her.
What's your name again, Lori?
Jack Cousteau, underwater seaman. I'm too busy swimming right now. Hold on.
Be careful. Beware
of the
sea monkeys.
Watch out for that shark. It's going to get your leg.
Rodney Ramos.
Yes.
No, all one word?
Not
don't
all
mistaken
one word?
Me for my well-known famous brother, Umberto.
Does that get confusing? Do people confuse you for
Oh, well, Umberto? I always tell this story because it is funny. And, you know, I think Umberto at this point has found the humor in it. But, you know, because he always like, he's like, oh,
he's
Jesus.
Not, he's going to keep torturing me either.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
So one time these two guys come up to me and they have books of mine. They say, hey, can you sign this? I'm going, yeah.
Number two.
Look at that.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Now follow away.
Ta-da.
And then I shall see you exactly where you are. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, you don't want Red stalking you.
The stalker.
The next okra?
Well, yes, this, ladies and gentlemen, coming from the one woman who could trip over every celebrity without knowing who they are.
Red
She's
superpower.
Called Star Tripper, Star Tripper. Look at her now. She's going to trip over that star and how.
Oh.
Wait, no, she'll be like Star Tripper.
You got to do the slow lounge lizard style.
Yeah.
You are a Bond villain.
She will trip over a celebrity she doesn't even know. And then turn around and call him a dick.
Yes, it was their fault.
Never called him a dick.
Oh, really? Are you sure?
Other obscenities.
No.
No.
She's like, nah.
No.
Red's
Star
a lover. She's
tripper,
she's not violent.
Shut up.
Watch out. She's getting angry. She's turning into the Hulk.
She could totally She-Hulk me.
She-Hulk.
Banicula.
Banicula. Na, 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 na. Banicula. Ma, na, na, na.
And on that bombshell and musical interlude, we shall say a fond farewell.
Adios, senor. I shall see you on the high seas. We will capture that Moby Dick and we will take him down. Have a fine meal of him. We will, we will.
Okay, that's your new intro.
That is. Oh, fuck.